What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 8th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. We have Jackson Jobo. He went 3.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. No, it was in Coors, but we should note that Coors has been so bad that you can stream them in Coors. Colorado, that offense are just like terrible. So this is really disappointing. There were 2 home runs, both on breaking balls to left-handers as it came back over the plate. 2 run shots. That really is most of the damage here. Another one was just like a weird balls in play kind of thing. But still 2 Ks and 6 whiffs for a guy like this. Very disappointing. Now, Jackson Jobe is a pitcher that I did not expect to be amazing at this point. I think of Jobe as someone who by June or July should be better than this. It's hard, though. It's a really tough sell in that we're not seeing Jobe get whiffs. We're not seeing this guy that's just like, oh my gosh, the K-minus walk is so good and the ERA isn't there. What I do see, though, is a really good curveball that isn't quite being utilized right, an unreal slider at 91, and then fastballs at like 96, 97 that guys are just hunting for a lot. And I think there's something about Jobe in the way that he pitches. Maybe it's the 6 feet of extension. Maybe there's tipping of some kind. Maybe it's arm angle changes in some way that makes it easier for guys to pick up what he's throwing. But Jackson Jobe right now is kind of easy to pick up and make contact with. However, the wide arsenal does suggest that there is a path or a way that these pieces fit together to be an absolute stud and be hard to hit. Now, this could be the Bobby Miller problem of having a lot of good pitches that all are really good stuff and just doesn't feel like you're putting it together. I will say that I think Jackson Jobe has 2 advantages. One, I think his overall approach and tweaks are just a better level. The Dodgers are very much straightforward, like just throw your stuff, while the Tigers actually do believe in their pitching coach and their system to make this a little bit better. But 2, Jackson Jobe's command, I think, actually is pretty good. You watch him game or at bat by at bat, and you see there is a game plan, and he's generally around that, and that should not be underrated. Here's the thing. In your 12-teamer, if you want to drop Jobe, by all means, go ahead. You can do that. I very much understand it. I'm tempted to do it myself because it's just I'm sick of waiting. There's no real outline of when this will get better. Also, you might want to hold on to it because how this looks moving forward, everything that he's gone through, that's been the investment period, right? That's been us understanding that this will get better later on. And here we are on May 8th. You have to ask yourself, how much longer am I willing to invest? Let's just imagine that you're picking up someone else off the wire as a spec ad at the moment, and the name Jackson Jobe doesn't matter. Are you okay with 2 weeks of waiting at this point, 3 weeks or so? Or do you just kind of get this idea he'll never figure it out at this point? Because that's not necessarily the case. So debate that, see your options on the wire, see how your staff is going. But if you have too many of these that are just like not working out and you don't really know what to hold on to or not, I understand how Jackson Jobe could be one of those that you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to stream instead. The good news is that he hosts the Red Sox, which is not so bad to do. And then he goes to Toronto, and the Blue Jays are not really the most powerful offense at the moment. So those are good matchups again for Jobe. It might be good enough for him to succeed. He's also had a season of not really having a low floor outside the last 2 starts. And as he's going through this development phase of not actually hurting you, which I've always liked. But now you've seen that floor, and now it's harder to go through. This is always the most difficult part with a starting pitcher is after the worst start, what do you do? I'm going to stay, hold Jackson Jobe a little bit longer. I love the slider usage, and I think that this will get better, not worse. Michael Wacha against the White Sox, 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. This was a slam dunk of a game here or matchup for Michael Wacha. And by the way, it was so funny being at the Yankee game last night. In the moment that the Padres took the lead, the entirety of Yankee Stadium as the pitch was coming in was cheering because the Knicks won at the same moment. And it was such a surreal feeling of Yankee Stadium being happy that they're losing all of a sudden. But yeah, slam dunk, that's why I'm mentioning that. It was actually kind of weird, by the way, that Michael Wacha had 2 for 18 whiffs on the changeup and just 21% usage. So blame it on the White Sox. It's kind of funny that him not even having that amazing pitch still was fantastic. probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't one of the White Sox. Okay. Sonny Gray, 92-93 is cool. We've got the low sweeper. We've got backdoor curves. We've got things working over the plate. Blame it on the Pirates a little bit, sure. But it's nice to see him really have a good start here. 7 innings of 8 strikeouts and 3 base runners have showed up ball and got the win. Lovely to see it. We obviously keep starting Sonny Gray. This was Sonny, not Gray. And Kodai Senga, too. I mean, really nice to see him do well against the Diamondbacks. I've been a little bit doom and gloom with him as the four-seamer velocity has been down. The cutter usage has been a little bit off, the ghost fork hasn't been as overwhelming. And those kind of suck around. I mean, the 21% CSW and sub-95-mile-per-hour velocity for Senga's four-seamer is still present. The ghost fork with 2-for-19 whiffs. The cutter, though, was pushed up in usage, as it should. And it generated outs. 5 walks here for Kodai Senga, though. 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 5 walks, 4 Ks. That cutter saved him. So I'm hoping that we get Kodai Senga really working well with the ghost fork getting whiffs, cutter just being the stabilizer, and four-seamer just kind of surviving around the zone. I hope that's what we see next against the Pirates. Christopher Sanchez against the Rays got the win. 6 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Everything is fine, right? Well, yeah, no, maybe. He's at like 96, which is fine, right? Like it's like 95, 96. Okay, we're fine with that. The real thing is the last 2 games since the forearm scare, which is still weird and I'm terrified about it, but maybe I shouldn't be. I don't know. Is the fact that his changeup feel has been worse the last 2 games. And that's always been the thing for Christopher Sanchez. That changeup has to steer the ship. 1-for-22 whiffs with a 50% strike rate is what? That's really weird. This was a 32% CSW sinker and against the Rays. And that's how he got this, I think. But it's really, really weird. We're going to keep starting him and hoping that everything is just in the past and he's going to be fine. Valente Biazo got the gold star because, oh my gosh, 39% CSW against the Dodgers, 5.1 innings, which is like the longest start I've seen from ages, 7 strikeouts. He returned a 46% CSW on his cutter, 8-for-20 called strikes on the pitch. All of that stuff is phenomenal, and I do not believe this in the slightest. I mean, come on, it's Valente Biazo. He's not this kind of guy. He's not someone who's going to have this kind of performance constantly for the Marlins. 5-for-15 whiffs, by the way, on that. Yeah, the sweeper down and away is just, let's be real here. Everybody is a major leaguer for a reason, but Valente Biazo is not all of a sudden going to be this massive play for you. You have Landon Knack on the other side against the Marlins. He got the win because it was 5 innings of 0 runs for its 1 walk and 5 strikeouts. And let's be honest, I didn't expect Knack to go 5 innings because he was pulled 4.2 last time by Dave Roberts. And it was just so frustrating. And I just didn't want to do it. I didn't want to dance with this 5 and dive, hopefully. And I'm glad that it worked for those who tried it out for Landon Knack. But I think Knack is easily the last one of the Dodgers. Kasparius and May and Gonsolin and Yamamoto and Sasaki. Like, he's on the far end of it. This was also a 7-game week. So they went 7 starters because they could. But yeah, Landon Knack is not someone you should be rostering. This was just that situation of, hey, it's the Marlins and maybe you can get a win. I'm so glad that you got it. Hunter Green, 3 innings of absolute dominance. And then all of a sudden, he got pulled doing warmups after 3 innings and was warming up for the 4th. He was 16-for-53 whiffs. Okay, 53 pitches and already had 16 whiffs. All right, that's near a 30% swing strike rate. I think that's actually like slightly better. He was sitting 100. Oh my gosh. Yeah, he got pulled because he has a groin injury. And for those that want to shout because he was throwing 100, well, it was a groin injury. So I hope he's okay. We don't know. We're in the dark right now. We had some other weird injuries like Dylan Cease. I was at this game, as I mentioned before. And what's funny is I was talking to someone on the Padres beforehand about Cease and, of course, banging the drum like he's got it through the cutter, blah, blah, blah. But they were saying that his mechanics have been bad, which is true. I've been watching him and seeing how he's just inconsistent. That's a constant thing with Cease, though, is that he goes in and out of it. But he was saying, no, this is like way worse than it usually is. And that's all he's been focusing on. And he can't think about a cutter right now. And it's like this 10th thing he's got to think about. And then so I go watch him. He's 6.2 innings of 1-1, 1 hit, 2 walks, 9 Ks. He had a no-hitter going into the 7th. And a 2-strike high four-seamer out of the zone to Cody Bellinger that he somehow hit out of the park. I still don't get. He had 20 whiffs for a gallows pole. I mean, he was filthy. Judge was striking out to him. And even that was like, yeah, he's going to throw a slider down. Probably Judge knew too, and he still couldn't hit it. It was, yeah, he was killing it. So maybe now we'll get the cutter. But oh, wait, no, he got removed, right? Well, we don't really know what it is. He said it was forearm cramps. It was a thing like all of a sudden he was cramping up and his hand was feeling weird, which doesn't sound like cramps. It sounds like normal forearm soreness that, oh no, I'm terrified. I hope he's okay. We don't know anything right now. And yeah, we hold our breath on Dylan Cease. Max Fried was on the other side. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace. Like, he's been just so, so, so good. Really good control here and command of that four-seamer with that sinker too is just, he's really locked in and it's beautiful. Framber Valdez also was locked in this start because that's just what he does. He goes and frustrates you endlessly and then finally he's like, all right, I'll go 7 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 Ks, fine. You know, it's just, okay. Robbie Ray was also great. We're going to watch him on YouTube after this. That is, go check that out, our YouTube channel. I break down a start every single day of the week, and I'm going to be listening to your YouTube comments. You guys requested Ray. He went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. The 1 earned run should not have been an earned run. It was one of those stupid non-error errors where a fielder loses the ball in the air. Like, it's a can of corn. Everybody knows you should catch this ball, and you don't because you lose it in the, you know, in the wind or the lights or sun or whatever it is. Drives me nuts. What is cool from Robbie Ray in this one, I mean, first of all, it's the Cubs and you're a little bit worried about it. I was a little bit worried about it, but I still went for it, is that the curveball showed up and the whole trajectory of this season, this is gets lost a ton, is Robbie Ray was throwing a ton of four seamers and he was walking a lot of guys because he didn't throw anything else and they were fouling balls off and he just wasn't throwing the slider enough. And then he started throwing the slider more and all of a sudden, okay, great. Now you are getting more strikes and things are good and it's stabilizing, but he also has a changeup and a curveball, and that changeup wasn't utilized a ton earlier on, but it was the third pitch. And now he remembers, oh, right, I had this curveball that had like a 20% plus swing strike rate last year. So he finally threw it. Robbie Ray, you threw a ton of curveballs, like 20 plus of them, and you had a 36% strike rate. Oh, no. No, and also you only threw or 26 whiffs on the slider is really strange because the slider was actually like 62% usage to left-handers, which is typical. Actually, we don't see Robbie Ray go against lefties a lot. We see a ton of right-handers for him. We saw them here. The slider was not as good against them, but he made it work. What I'm trying to get at is that Robbie Ray is expanding as he goes on, right? He only had 4 seamers before, then it was a slider, and now it's the curve, and it's just a better version of Robbie Ray. He's getting more strikes, typically. I mean, by throwing these, it's 36% strikes in the curve. That's not going to be the world. But yeah, he's in a much better place than he was before. It's what we expected him to eventually get to. You should really like Robbie Ray moving forward. All right, we have other guys to talk about. Yusei Kikuchi had a great game. Is that real? We have Gunnar Hoglund tying his shoes. Merrill Kelly and Tyler Malley and Jose Barrios and so many others. And we're going to talk about all of that after this break. Yusei Kikuchi went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Jays. This is great. It was against his former team. Except that I don't believe any of this. He was still under 95 and he threw just so many sliders and four seamers for strikes. Sure. But I just don't think the command is that good. He had control, but not command. If that makes sense, like inside the zone, it's not really accurate. I don't think that the slider is really that great at the moment. Still, he's just not the guy that you remember from before. Quinn Priester against the Astros, threw really good sliders down and away to right-handers. Against the Astros, they were all right-handers. Jordan Alvarez, so that's all you got, which really works for Quinn Priester because he's a sinker-slider guy. Now, the sinker didn't really go inside, so it was 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 3 walks, 3 Ks. The slider did all the work here. I don't think this is something that's sustainable. Jonathan Cannon, it's not the start. Like, he needs to have one truly productive start all the way. You need to get a win, good ratios, fair number of strikeouts for us to fire the Overture 1812 cannons. I just want to play some Tchaikovsky. Haven't done it. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 9 hits. Oh, 0 walks and just 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? One day we'll get that from Jonathan Kenning. One day. Jose Barrios against the Angels was interesting. It was 6 innings of 2 earned runs with 9 strikeouts, but 10 base runners for a 1.67 WHIP, 5 walks, 5 hits. 47% CSW on the curve is amazing. 12 over 38 whiffs. And the four-seamer and sinker were just not good. The only one he felt comfortable throwing strikes with was that curveball. And the sinker's down the pipe. So he is a great undulator, even inside of starts. And you just kind of, if you want this in a 15-teamer, I totally get it. 12-teamers, I feel like you got to chase something else. You just don't know what you're going to get. And even when it's good like this, you have a negative a lot. Yeah, I just, it's not the kind of thing I like doing. I'm Gunnar Hoglund against the Mariners in what I'm calling Sacre Verde. Instead of Sacramento, it's the sacred green of the Athletics. And you have 5.1 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. It's a 41% CSW sweeper, which is cool because Hoglund really is just more of a four-seamer guy with hopefully enough in the secondary department. And it's not really the greatest four-seamer, but it is good against left-handers and right-handers upstairs, right? It works really well like that, but it's not one of those Gavin Williams types four-seamers where I'm really excited to watch it and want to dominate so much every night. Hoglund is very much about, okay, I need at least 2 of these secondaries working. Generally has 1 of them. The changeup is actually the one that really impressed me the first time. So hopefully that sweeper sticks around and then the changeup is there moving forward too. And that would make him a full complete, you know, you have an approach against righties, which is four seamer and sweeper. Then you have four seamer change against lefties. Tyler Mahle against the Red Sox in Fenway survived 5 innings of 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 0 strikeouts. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? The cutter that we saw last time didn't really show up again here. And this was 92 without much else. I guess it worked out. I'm happy for you, but I just don't think that Mahle does enough. Tanner Houck was on the other side, 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And the good news is that Tanner Houck was sitting like 94 previously, and now he's at 95, 96. And that's great. I mean, it was 93, 94 before. So that's good. The sweeper is still down over 4 inches of horizontal break, which is bad. And the splitter is not going arm side like we saw a ton. Sorry, glove side. No, arm side. Yes. Arm side like we saw a ton the first half of last year that really propelled his success against left-handers. We're still missing 2 of those major things, the dope sweeper and the phenomenal commanded splitter. And because of that, I'm still out. I just am happy at least the velocity is up to help mitigate disasters. So that's why it was 200 runs here and not more, because those secondaries really need to be the things that work for Tanner Houck. Semien Woods-Richardson against the Orioles, only 4.2 innings and 1 earned run. Sorry, 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? And what's interesting is that the four-seamer actually has 20 inches of vert and 93, but just didn't go upstairs with it, and he didn't really nail an approach. And that's the kind of problem with Semien Woods-Richardson. I can understand if he goes high four-seamers all the time and then does the Blake Snell blueprint with sliders down. It's not a, you know, novel concept. And I imagine he's trying to do it. He just can't really at the same vert and velocity. There's also a changeup that only went 3 for 11 strikes here. So it was 200 runs and 4.2 innings against the Orioles. I just don't think the juice is worth the squeeze here. Merrill Kelly is your quality start, Toby Darling. So it was 6.1 innings of 300 runs, but a 1 whip and 6 strikeouts. We'll take that every single time. It was a loss, but oftentimes that is a win for the Diamondbacks. He gets the Giants next. Great. Keep holding there. Mitch Keller against the Cardinals gave you a very, very poor quality start. That is a 10 base runner game with 300 runs and 6 innings with 6 strikeouts. Got the loss. This is kind of standard Mitch Keller. I just don't think he's going to have enough of those really great outings to justify the mediocrity in between. Ben Brown was a streaming victory according to chat. And I don't know if it is, but I guess so, because it was 5 innings and 9 strikeouts. But I'm not happy with 300 runs and 6 hits and 2 walks. It's not the worst ratios we've ever seen. And I really hate the fact that Ben Brown still does not have a number 3 pitch. It is a changeup that is 0 for 3 for strike. So literally just doesn't. And you have the four seamer in this one going 8 for 65 whiffs, which sounds like a lot. 8 whiffs. Oh my gosh. But then you realize it's 65. So that's like what, a 13% swing strike rate, something along those lines, which isn't amazing. Maybe it's a 14%, quick maths. But I don't think that Ben Brown is good enough with just 2 pitches. This was against the Giants. It should be better ratios than that. I mean, I'm happy for the 9 strikeouts, but I don't know. I don't think that he's enough. Charlie Morton started again, and he's just not good enough, guys. I feel bad for him. He shouldn't have come back one more year. So don't go for Charlie Morton. Logan Allen didn't do well against the Nationals, and yeah, you shouldn't be going after Logan Allen. We had some disappointments, and I'm going to go with Chase DeLander first. 3 innings of 6 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, 0 Ks, because he should be starting Chase DeLander. He's empty velocity, 97, 98. The curve that had strikes in the past did not have strikes here, and there you go. But yeah, we had 4 guys of disappointment. 1, Grant Holmes, 5.1 innings of 4 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, 5 Ks. Man, so annoying. You got to do better than 12 over 88 whiffs against the Reds. The curveball should be that bigger whiff pitch. Only 10 thrown of them, half of them for strikes. And it's just fortunate. It's just annoying. This was 2 solo shots that really messed up the game. You know, obviously he had 2 other runs, but those solo shots are just what kind of ruined this one. And it's been this whole tumultuous season of Grant Holmes. After that Dodgers game, I think we got more excited, especially because he was hosting the Reds here. I'm still holding Grant Holmes. I think that you're better than just a four-seamer slider guy. You have that really good curveball that we saw last year. That is just, I think it's going to come back. It's gotta. And then everything kind of clicks together and everything's cool. So you get the Nationals on Monday. That's great because the Nationals are not a good offense. Please show me that curveball more than 10 times. Try to really get that feel back. Soroka, Michael Soroka, it's disappointing because I was actually in on this, saying Soroka had 6 for 18 whiffs on his changeup in his last rehab start, and that should be really good against the Guardians because he has a left-handed lineup. That's a good nullifier. And he actually didn't really do that. It was sliders working really well for 5 innings. 5 innings of shutout ball with 8 strikeouts and, what was it, 2 hits and 1 walk. And then all of a sudden he allows a walk and 2 singles and then a base-clearing double, gets pulled from the game, and that guy scores. So you have 5 innings, 4 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. Careful Icarus all the way through. Pretty interesting to see the slider go 50% CSW, though. And he does get Atlanta next, which is a little bit scarier. But I do think that Soroka will turn into a Toby. I think that you're going to generally want him in your 12-teamers. The slider is much better this year. That changeup looked promising in AAA, and I do think that over time it should be good for him. And it's fine. It's not overwhelming because the fastballs are not overwhelming. The slider looks good enough. And yeah, that's a 12-team Toby to me. With like maybe like a Toby in the sense of chasing the strikeouts a little bit more, maybe like a hipster, but not even that. He's a Toby. Brian Wu also was disappointing. 6 innings and 5 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. He was bamboozled in the first and then settled down, and he's still great. And I feel bad that it's the list curse. You get the focus of the list and you have a bad start that week. That's just what happens, right? I'm too volatile, too reactionary. No, I mean, let's be honest. Brian Wu, unfortunate in Sacramento, didn't have a good day. He's still pitched well. And last and not least is Shane Baz against the Phillies. 3.1 innings of 6 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, and 3 Ks. And yeah, he's looked rougher the past few. The last start was worse than this one because for a couple reasons, mainly that the four-seamer was 97-98 with a 74% strike rate. But the other part is that the curve was pretty good in the zone. It just wasn't tempting along the edges enough, and the Phillies kind of sat in there and had their way with it, right? They swung a lot, they made a lot of contact on those high zone pitches, and that's that. The changeup was good against lefties, and I dug that too. I think that this could have been better if it weren't against the Phillies, and I think a lot of people are worried about Baz because he was so good in the beginning that he's not so bad. It's like, well, this feels like the real one. That's always what happens, right? Is that this feels like the real one, the one that just happens. And I feel that way too. A lot where like you have like the amazing outing. I'm like, oh, this is the real guy. But I don't think that Shane Baz is this pitcher. I think he's more like the one we saw for the earlier parts of April. And I feel like this is a step forward actually from the last one. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for all of your support. If you didn't check out the updates we made to the Pitcher List Live Stats app, go check it out. It's on Blue Sky and on Twitter, inside the Discord as well. It's for those with PL Pro, you'll see an incredible dashboard of live pitch stats that are Statcast data, some of our own unique ones as well, pitch plots and everything, the track as the game goes on for every single pitcher. It's amazing. Go check it out. That is exclusive for PL Pro members. That is it for today, though. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.